I'm in control of those, nobody else's. No matter, you know, what the day has been like, however it's turned out, whether it's been a wonderful day or a very hard day or whatever it might be, or other people have impinged on me, how I think of that day or how I think about myself is how I think, not how other people think.
A very warm welcome to Our Spirited Life, the broadcast for women who simply will not settle. This season, we're talking about life in our third act, indeed owning our third act. And today I'm truly delighted to welcome Debbie Weber, who is a mother, wife, paediatric occupational therapist with specialism in early years feeding difficulties, and I remember those, and therapy management. Debs is also a keen gardener, and I have to say, with a wonderfully cooperative and supportive husband in their beautiful garden. She's a sister, friend, my dearest friend for 50 years, and painter. And we have some stories to tell about that, but perhaps for another time. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you, Susie. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you, darling. So I am intrigued, as we, having known each other for so long, are now in our third act. How your career has affected your life purpose?
Gosh, I think that it's been a very strong influence on me. I think that I went to train at 18 and qualified at 21. And from quite early on, within a few years, I specialised in paediatrics and then took on the management roles as well and did an Open University master's in health service management. And so I've had quite a strong focus all the way through. So it's had a trajectory, if you like. And then about 10 years ago, I stopped for 3 years and then went back into it and is now doing purely clinical role. But it's had a huge influence as I've gone through my adult life, because it's given me a real sense of who I am to some degree. In the sense of, if somebody says to you, what do you do? It's always quite easy to say what I do. And then from that, you make your connections, your networks, you build up your ideas and your skills and your clinical reasoning, I suppose. And all those things bring you confidence in your own ability as you go through your career. But at the same time, every family and child you meet are different. So everyone is a challenge. Everyone has to be thought of as an individual. And it's this wonderful thing, this career of mine, which is the combination of the science and the art, and that kind of the neurodevelopmental side of it and how we learn and develop, but also the art of how you communicate with people, how you develop people, how you support them, how you give them the right thing at the right time, those sorts of things. So it's hugely influential on me as a personality and on my self-esteem, I suppose.
Mm. So do you think those things within your career are partly what motivates you to keep going and to keep growing? And you said, I've heard before, that of course times have changed greatly over the last couple of decades or a few decades, where you're in your working environment. Mm. And so you've had to learn as time goes on and keep up with those within the NHS.
So I have constant challenges in IT, because everything's non-paper based now. And, you know, we're not the IT generation, are we? So all those sorts of things. And I've got to the point in my career where you can give me most clinical situations and I'm fine, but give me the IT and I'm a blubbering wreck on the floor. But I've had to just pick myself up and do it and learn it. And also not be too proud to say to people, I need help with this. please help me with it, you know.
Or so many people, that's going to resonate with so many, particularly me, with this learning curve of doing something new. Evolving is incredibly exhilarating, but it could also be exhausting because we are using brain cells that, you know, perhaps were asleep before. But it's so exciting, isn't it?
It is. It's very infusing. It's a balance between I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking of retirement, really. And so I love it, I appreciate it, and I feel I've done it for a jolly good time and I've got everything out of it. But I'm also quite excited about retiring and trying new things and pushing myself further with other things. Whether they might be the kind of metaphysical thought processes that I have in my mind, or whether it's with the gardening or with painting or with just anything I do, really, just thinking about all the opportunities that are out there. I don't think it makes any difference. However old you are, you can always start something new. You can always pick up on something that infuses or inspires you. And we have such a wonderful time now that everything's at our fingertips. I could literally be on my iPad all day.
Do you think that refocus is a good description of what you're planning to do? Because the word retirement can sometimes have a lot of people look forward to retirement. But I think particularly our audience is not thinking about retirement. We've got so much that we want to do. We want to partly give back, but we also, it's our time now. It's time for us. Mm. You know, our children have...
I think that's very true. I think it's a refocus. It's an opportunity to have the mind space to just sort of take oneself... You know, let life take you as well. Just the things that happen that, you know, you can pick up on and go forward with, that perhaps, you know, if time is short, otherwise you can't. Also, just to really try and, focus on my physical health and all those sorts of things, which I have never really done very well, to be truthful. And so I think that's quite inspiring too, really. And that sort of feeling of, I think we all like to have elements of control in our life.
That leads me nicely on to asking you what you feel is the most significant impact on your well-being in recent years that's enabled you to feel that you are having a good life in the here and now.
I suppose it's really the awareness that I can control my thoughts. And actually the thoughts affect your physical well-being as well as your mental well-being. And I'm in control of those. Nobody else is. No matter, you know, what the day has been like, however it's turned out, whether it's been a wonderful day or a very hard day or whatever it might be, or other people have impinged on me, how I think of that day or how I think about myself is how I think, not how other people think. So it's about controlling thoughts of negative thoughts, and controlling negative thoughts, but also really turning everything so it's a really positive thing. And that builds up your own self-esteem. And it enables you to go on to the next day, and the next day will be a good day as well.
Yes, I have a lovely mantra, which I got from Boho Beautiful. She's a lovely young woman. And people can access, I'll put that on the list below, in the morning. It's today is a beautiful day of opportunity. I am exactly where I need to be. I open myself to the universe and trust in the unfolding of my life. And that's lovely, because also letting go is a very positive thing to do whilst we manage our thoughts and our emotions. You mentioned a book that, because I know you're an avid reader, use... Intelligent Chicklit Lit to help me get to sleep at night. And I know I've seen you and I've looked at your library of wonderful, intelligent, much more cerebral books that you enjoy reading and I'm sure are helpful to you in your learning process. You mentioned one in particular.
It's called The Buddha Brain. It looks at, in recent years, we've had such an understanding of... being with brain scanning, with genetic understanding about how we are physically made up. So the understanding of what we need as humans, if you like, and that we are sort of pre-programmed within ourselves, but actually that we can also think about the spiritual side of our lives and how that affects us in a way. So it's that combination of the two. It's the art and science again coming together, which is, I think, why I like it so very much. Because you can think of the logic of how it works and the sort of organization of humans, but at the same time, we all know that we have very much individual thoughts and individual processes. So it's about bringing those two together, if you like, and having an understanding of why we react to something. So why we might be so upset by somebody saying something or feeling left, you know, yes. Say for example, being left out of something. Like years ago, I thought, oh, I'm left out. But now I just think, oh, well, you know, I know that's because we're herd type creatures, you know. So our first thing is that we want to be part of a group, yeah. because that was our yeah. survival mechanism. Now I don't yeah. need to be part of a group. I can be quite, you know, capable of managing on my own.
Yes, I spoke to some. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask, have you read the book Human Givens? It's Givens. I'll put it.
No, I haven't actually. That sounds good.
I think you'd like yeah. that one, and I think our audience would as well. Belonging. Do you think as we go are in our third act, as we are older and more mature in many ways, not all, our individuality matters? Because last year I was on a panel at the Cheltenham Literature Festival, and it was three of us, and we were talking that the event was called Invisible Women. Mm-hmm. And I think that as we grow older, in some respects, many women do believe that they become invisible. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking, well, I'm quite an extrovert anyway, but I'm thinking, well, hell no, you know, this is the best time of my life. I've grown, I've matured, I've mm-hmm. learned. Boy, have I learned from my experiences. And now I'm finding my real place to be. And I want mm-hmm. to stand up and be counted. And there are so mm-hmm. many others of us that want to do the same. Actually, mm-hmm. hence this broadcast. And so... Mm-hmm. Do you think that that process is something that only comes with age and maturity, or can our daughters, you know, can the younger people learn that as well? I think what I'm asking is, in essence, do you believe that learning is for life, and if so, why?
Oh gosh, it's so difficult to completely answer that. I think there is something sometimes innate in us that starts off young, and that we are, that life opportunities helps us with. So, you know, that kind of, if you're brought up in a family where an inquiring mind is praised, then you do it. If you're brought up in a family where perhaps it was ignored, or even worse, you know, sneered at, then you're not going to do it, are you? So you've got to get over some of those bits. And that with age, I think, will come, because you realise that there are things in life that really help you. If you say, for example, with what's happening with coronavirus, and that we are sort of, everything sort of seems to be coming sort of slightly closed in. But actually, if you can manage your thoughts and manage how you are around that, and be positive about it, and see it as an opportunity, then it's much easier for you. Life becomes easier. And I do think with age that comes as well. I think we do grow in confidence, but I don't know that everybody does. I think we have to work at it a bit. I don't think it's a given.
It isn't a given. And I think that we grow in confidence in what we do. And some of us, and again, this takes work and learning and dedication, grow in confidence in who we are. But I know from research and from being told that women can be bulldogs in the boardroom, in their work, and confident, super confident in what they do,
yes.
but not confident in who they fundamentally are as women. And that's one of the things that I try to address with my clients. And so do you think that you're, again, educating yourself, learning, helps you with the confidence in who you are as a woman? Because you've had a fantastic career, but you have learned, you've followed a process, and you've taken a path that you've chosen. You've made choices.
And
you've
known Yes, you've I have made it. Choices. And I think that I've made choices. I tried, some things I did fall into, but I tried to be quite thoughtful with my choices. And I tell you, when I realized that was when my children were starting to make choices about, say, university or quite big things like that. And my strategy, I don't know where it came from, was that, say, for example, when you had to put three universities, I would say, okay, put the one, the really tip-top one that you really, you could possibly aim for if you were going at the top. Put one that you think you might hopefully get, and then a backup one just in case. And it made me realize, because it was very literal in those days when you have literally three choices in university, that actually that's what I probably do in life quite a lot, and I hadn't realized I did.
Yeah, so that's an innate wisdom.
And that's a safety mechanism, I think.
Yes, yes, yeah. So,
so you can reach for the stars, but actually you're not dissatisfied if you don't get to the top star. You're okay if you get to the middle one and you have your security blanket of the one at the bottom.
There's a lovely saying that goes something like, if you reach for the stars, you may not achieve that, but at least you won't end up with a handful of mud.
Yes, that's a very good one.
Yeah.
So, yes, I know. I think you've got to really, oh gosh, I think as you get older, I think it's really good to have a bit of focus around something. Mm-hmm. And I know I stopped work for 3 years and we were converting a farmhouse in Ireland at the time. And actually I really struggled having stopped my job, but I had stopped it because I was completely, I just got more and more to do and it was sort of slightly overwhelming. And I thought, gosh, by Friday I'm going green. You know, I was lying on the sofa completely green with exhaustion. This isn't quite working for me. But what I hadn't put in place was something really mindful to take over. And I think this time I'm going to be much more mindful about where I go and what I do.
So you're going to, rather than retire, you're going to refocus.
Yes. And actually I was thinking that I might give, you know, I think also about really stepping it up, not just doing the easy things in life, perhaps thinking about the more challenging things as well. Mm. Only if I really want them, because it's about what I want.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because we have so much that we can give back, but it is also me time. I remember something about a nuns in a certain convent who, not one of them, at a great age, suffered from dementia, and it was because they kept their brain in a certain way. Again,
oh, yeah.
I just looked that up and put it for our audience, because it's fascinating. And you mentioned neuroscience, metaphysics. This is something that we now know about the neural pathways in our brain, and how we're going to talk about this in a minute, self-talk and all of these things that we do. And I think that one of the things that this year has taught us is about the attitude of gratitude, and, for instance, not being so material. Well, we all love lovely things and we want to do the best we can and achieve the best we can achieve. But one of my favourite things to kind of get out of myself and get out of my own way when I'm walking outside is to stop if I'm under a tree and look up. Because up there is a whole new world, and I'm visual, I'm a photographer, and so visual things feed and nurture my soul. Mm. And so having a different perspective, so by looking up, you know, it's stunning up there. But getting a different perspective and refocusing is very energizing. And I found lately refocusing, evolving, is so super exciting. It's also exhausting, but it's the excitement and it's the why you're doing it that keeps you going and wakes you up in the earliest hours of the night, which is when I have my most brilliant ideas, I have to say.
So I think, I tell you what I also think, is that I used to drive myself on all the time. I would always be doing something. And now I do, I literally talk to myself and say, right, you've been gardening for an hour and a half, your back's giving. I'm going to go and lie on the sofa a bit now. And I might watch some, I don't know, rather silly back-to-back sort of movie I probably watched three times over, but and then say, oh, that was lovely, but I've had enough of that now. I'm going to get, you know, I can't remember the name of the lady, but she does this thing where she goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, you know, and so you get up off your backside and you go and do something.
So, and do you think that comes with maturity, knowing when to stop and look after yourself?
I think the other thing I was thinking the other day was that, you know, in my sort of 20s and 30s, if you saw somebody with a really lovely house or a car or very glamorous clothes, and you would kind of be, oh, gosh, you know, I'd love to be like that. Now we realize, or now I realize, that actually there's enough to go around for everybody. So you don't need to be envious of anybody else's life, because you can create your own life, a good life. So you don't need to think about, you don't need to think about comparisons, to stop comparing yourself. And also within that, then stop being hard on other people as well. If they're not as nice as you hope they'd be, or whatever it might be, you know, not as able as you hope they are.
Yeah, because we can choose. We can choose to a degree when we learn to how we think, how we respond, and also what we manifest in life, and owning our choices. And I think we get much better at doing that in our third act, in our latter years. Although I have to say that in some respects, at the age of 62, I feel wiser but younger, because the sometimes, you know, our youngsters have a lot going on. And they don't have, they can't necessarily tackle that with the wisdom and maturity that we have. And so, which brings me on to the fact that we've all got, we've both got grown up children. And I know that your two are now going to end up a long way away. Hazel's already out in the Cayman Islands, and Harry's just about to join her. And so I know that for many women of our age, and perhaps a bit younger, university, empty nest syndrome is really challenging, and there can be a sense of bereavement. So I'm very fortunate that I'm only 2 hours away from my girls, and but empty nest syndrome is a really big thing when they go off to university. So how is it for you, and how important is it for you, knowing that your grown-up children are going to be the other side of the world, for you to be owning your third act and doing your own thing and focusing on you? How does all of that feel?
It's difficult, really, isn't it? Because it is a sense of bereavement. I can't belittle how much it does affect me, how much I miss Hazel already, although we, especially since the coronavirus, we've spoken every day on Skype. It's not the same, though. And it's I do feel a sense of bereavement, and I do feel at times that because I think she's been there about 6 or 7 years now, I've lost track, it's so long, and Harry and his girlfriend Jade will also be going, and I will miss them dreadfully. I think that I just have to own it. I have to say to myself, they're going where they want to be. They live their best life. And I always used to joke and say, never educate your children beyond school age, and never tell them the world is their oyster, because otherwise they will be off and gone. And it was only ever a half joke, to be truthful, because it really is one. I'm proud of them in a kind of maternal, lovely pride. Because they're great people, and they're very capable people, and they can go off and do their own thing. And I will miss them terribly, but I cannot be selfish about it.
It gives you the opportunity to go visit the Cayman Islands sometimes.
It's too hot, though.
Oh.
It's all right. It's for about 3 months a year. That's being a bit negative, isn't it? It's for January, February, March, it's fine. But after that, the heat makes me just completely melt.
Yeah.
I've still got January, February, March.
Yeah. So The fact that you, I mean, we've known each other since we were at school, since we were 10, 11,
mm-hmm.
10. And seen each other through an awful lot during those years. And I would say, actually, how important it is to choose quality in your friends rather than quantity. And as you get older, you know, that sort of hones down to a very, very precious number. You have been blessed from the choice that you made with your husband. And I know that each one of you has independently said of each other to me how much respect you have for each other as a partner, and how you've supported and seen each other through things. What do you think are the contributing factors to a lifelong relationship that is life enhancing and has seen you through all the challenging times to the knowing, you know, that, you know, this is going to be forever?
I think, firstly, I was lucky. I was very lucky. And I think that serendipitiness of life just is there. But I think that I was very blessed with really very sound parents, if you like. They'd been through the Second World War. My mother was a pediatrician. My father was a Church of England vicar. And they were very grounded. They were very giving. And they had a very... my mother had her own independent career, a bit like I've had, I suppose. And I could see the mutual respect that they had for each other. So I was brought up with that role model, and I don't think that can be made, you know, I don't think that can be undermined. So I went into meeting Con, I was only 18, but actually by the second date, I did realise he was special, because not only was he at that time, he's gone a bit seedy now, but haven't we all? he was rather gorgeous to look at. He had long hair and a beard. And wore very tight flared trousers, as you can imagine they did in those days. And he had sort of a slight Irish accent. And he was sort of rather wild, which is always very attractive, isn't it? Rather a wild looking man. yes, but although he looked wild, actually when you spoke to him, we really had a very detailed conversation right from that second date, about sharing things that were worrying us and concerning us. And we both felt safe in that communication. And I think that's what's gone on all the way through. Mm. So don't think for one minute there haven't been times when I could have easily killed him. And many times when I threatened to, you know, I had to be a complete drama queen and threatened goodness knows what else. But he's always been there for me if ever there was any issue, always. Mm. And he's got a very kind heart, and he does always think the best of people. Mm. And I think, and he, instead of dragging me down, he would always build me up.
Yeah.
And that's very life enhancing.
Yes.
And so probably a lot of my confidence comes from him as much as from me.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, I adore you both to bits, and your wisdom is very special, and I'd like you, please, to tell our audience three top tips that you feel have seen you through and take you forward.
It's a very good question to ask me, because it really made me focus on how I manage with life, really, and the things that are the sort of underpins that keep me going. And I suppose number one is that I speak to myself as my best friend. So I say to myself, you're doing well. My father, he went into a home at the end of his life. He died at 95. But I realized when I visited him each day that as I left, he would say, you're doing so well, darling. You're doing so well. And that was always his leaving words as I left. And when he died, one of the things that came to me was that, gosh, who's telling me that now? And I realized I needed to tell myself.
Oh.
And it's really, really wonderful. And so I say it like I can hear him saying it to me now as we're speaking. But it is that kind of being kind to yourself, not finding fault with yourself all the time. It's such an important thing. And we can be our own autonomous beings. We don't need to rely. Of course, I rely on my family and all these sorts of things and their nurturingness. But I also know within myself, I don't need completely to rely on them. Mm-hmm. That there is enough in me, there's enough strength and resilience in me to keep myself going. That's and that's quite empowering in a way. Mm-hmm. So yes. That's number one.
Yes.
Number two is carpe diem, seize the day. Take any adventure or excitement that comes at you. Whoever invites you out, say, yes, I'd love to do that. You never know who you're going to meet and what's going to come from any situation in life. Try and always say yes to everything, even the things that are a bit scary.
Yeah, stepping out of your comfort zone, making a choice to just go do it.
I suppose one of the things years ago when I was, I learned to ski when I was 39. And of course, because the children were young at the time and learning to ski and Colm was much more athletic than I am, off they went at 100 miles an hour. And I went down the slope like this. But it didn't mean that I didn't enjoy it. And it didn't mean that I didn't get great excitement from it. So you don't have to do everything
100%.
No, and you made the excitement last longer by going down like that.
They'd all had at least three, what's the hot wine called?
Glühwein.
Before I got down the hill, but I did get there eventually. And I just love the fresh air, the sense of excitement with the speed. The whole shebang really was just such great fun, you know?
Yeah. So your third top tip.
My third one is about thinking of the Dalai Lama and his Art of Happiness book, which is Be Kind and You Will Be Happy. The art of happiness is kindness.
I love that, and I totally agree with it. Kindness and compassion. Sometimes it's hard, but if you can approach everything, including yourself, with kindness and compassion, it does really change lives.
It changes your life, really. It's about how you are being happy.
Yes, I heard on the radio that the serotonin levels in the giver of a gift are greater than the recipient of the gift.
Oh yes, I can well imagine that.
I'm a giver. I love giving, but I also love receiving. And I think there's a balance, isn't there? But that leads me nicely on to the song that you have chosen that uplifts, empowers, or moves you. And I know you've chosen something not necessarily beaty and dancey, but something that means a lot to you. So can you tell us what that is, please?
I've chosen Mark Knopfler and Emmylou Harris. And it's a kind of country song, which I'm not really into because I'm more of an old rocker in a way. But it's Beyond My Wildest Dreams.
Okay.
And he, of course, they have a lovely tuneful duet together. Mm-hmm. But he has this slightly gravelly, very sexy voice, and which also helps, doesn't it? But it's also about thinking about... not just about, you know, it's many layers in life and about how fortunate I have been with the life that I've had. So the relationship of my husband all this time, my children, also just within the resilience within myself, that beyond my wildest dreams, I've had a great life.
Oh, Debs, that's so, so beautiful. And we will put the details of that song and the books that we've mentioned at the end of this broadcast. So thank you, Debbie, so much for sharing that, sharing the wisdom, for being my friend all of these years. And before I get too moved about that, let's go on to say I'm so happy to have presented this to you. If you've enjoyed this and love Our Spirited Life, then just press subscribe to hear more. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, we have all sorts of ways in which you can do that. So everyone, stay fabulous, stay well, and I'll see you again very soon. If you enjoyed this broadcast, Please remember to like and subscribe. And to enjoy fabulous extra value, just click the link to our membership page.